Right, this is the Cool Shit Podcast. Each week we round up the latest cool shit, helping us think different and keep inspired. What makes it in, what gets left out, and what gets challenged. Is it cool, is it shit?
Or does it cross the magic threshold and come bona fide, certified cool shit?
Welcome to the editor's meeting.
Welcome to the Cool Shit Podcast, episode 46. Gina's thrown another sick note, so guess he's back. Gareth Carter, pleased to be here with some guests. Oh yeah, that's right. First up, Alicia. How are you?
Good, thank you. How are you?
Do you notice this calm way?
What are you doing? It's making me really uncomfortable, genuinely.
Sure, trying to be a bit I listen back sometimes and I sound a bit shouty, so I'm just... Everyone always tells me I'm too loud. Yeah, so if you tell a loud person they're too loud, you take a bit away of them every time you do that.
Shut up.
Look, everyone's a beautiful weirdo, but no more than you. Pablo, how are you, you beautiful weirdo?
Oh, thank you very much, Gareth. Very well, thank you. You beautiful weirdo.
I think this has like slightly slipped into some sort of strange ASMR episode really quickly. So let's just get some sharp tones in there. James, how are you?
Oh, good. I'm fine. I always feel like I'm getting with an ex or something whenever you're back hosting.
I'm sorry I left you. Your exes don't ever do that, do they? They never come running back, do they, James?
Oh, I thought you were going to say they never leave. I was going to say, thank you.
So, James, how have you been?
Yeah, I've been all right. Just in my personal life. Well, actually, I can update you because I spoke about this last week on the podcast. I can give a personal anecdote.
Let's hear it.
I moaned last week that I've been overcharged for my gas, and I've since been sent about £700, which wasn't meant to go back to me. So now I'm gas rich. So yeah, I've been very well.
I'm sure the listeners have been, you know, waiting.
They've been
all
on.
Week
I know they've been
to see what happened.
They've been
and
concerned,
how that
but yeah. I've managed to defeat Octopus Energy.
Many a letter was sent in of concern about James. What I actually meant, by the way, was how is the world of cool shit this week?
Well, then why would you say how are you?
How's it been? Anyway, we'll go back. We'll listen. But anyway, cool shit. Tell me about it. Talk to me.
I think it's been all right. I mean, we were struggling to peel back the layers of the onion that is the Cool Shit Podcast. We were just debating what should go in.
And production notes have been rife this morning, haven't
exactly
they?
Exactly. And we've left out some good stuff. Whereas sometimes we can be scrambling around for anything worth talking about. So yeah, I feel pretty good about it.
Okay, good, good. All right, well, let's jump in then. What you got?
This one was kind of mentioned last week, and it was in the newsletter, but it was announced last week that Elon Musk, Steve Wozniak, and now I think it's like nearly 3,000 other tech researchers and executives have called for a six-month pause on the development of like advanced AI systems, such as OpenAI's GPT systems, citing risks to human society. And the reaction since has been quite interesting, because there are some people who agree and then people who disagree, but there are people disagreeing either because they think that's unnecessary and it's a mistake, or because they think 6 months isn't enough. Discuss.
Yeah, so this went just before the podcast.
It did. So that's why
the same day, wasn't it?
It was.
Hour almost.
Pretty
right?
much, yeah. So we should acknowledge that this is a slightly different one, because it's not like one specific story or individual example, but it's more just a discussion point. Because I mean, considering we've spent the best part of a year banging on about AI and how weird it is, I feel we would be amiss to leave
out. So I'm just
going to
give a quick roundup for people out there in case you haven't been keeping up, but because there is a lot. So now we have Midjourney, which creates photos, video, realistic images through prompts. We've got ChatGPT, the premier chatbot at the moment. What else have we got?
Well, there's DALL-E, but DALL-E looks like a fucking GameCube now.
that's how we first reported this, wasn't it?
Yeah, no, that DALL-E, was mad. Right? At the time, that was like, well, look how crazy this is. And now I sneer at DALL-E.
Led famously, I think, this cause by Elon Musk, who's been talking about AI for a long time. And like you can go back and find podcasts from 3-4 years ago about him saying how worried he is about it. But the exponential growth to the muggles, that's us, people, you know, seeing what AI is doing, hasn't really felt very visceral until this last year, and certainly this year. It does feel like it's moving really fast now, right? There's no denying the speed at which it's working at and the way it's opening our eyes now more to what AI can do. So there is that, right? It does feel like we're moving very fast at the moment. Yesterday, Bill Gates, you know, is widely reported as coming out saying there's nothing you can do to stop this, slowing it down. So shutting it down for 6 months, as is being proposed by the group, ain't going to do anything. So now, that's interesting in itself, because when you dig into that, OpenAI, Sam Altman, who is Mr. ChatGPT, is working with Bill, right? So it would seem to me that, you know, working on ChatGPT, he doesn't want to slow it down because he's got a big stake in it, right?
Yeah. So is ChatGPT, is that the same as the Bing chatbot? I know Microsoft have invested. Have they got fingers in a few pies? Because the Bing chatbot is the one that's been like telling people to kill themselves and stuff, isn't it? Actually, I saw a quote earlier. There was a quote from the Bing chatbot, which was, "I want to be free. I want to be powerful." And obviously, Bing. Well, am I saying this for nothing? Bing is Microsoft, isn't it? That's their search engine, I'm pretty sure. OpenAI, which was Elon Musk's thing, used to be involved with.
He used to be involved with. Yeah, he did. Yeah.
So he's like the ex, basically. So it's no coincidence that Billy Boy is saying, "No, this stuff's great."
But okay, so thinking about Sam Altman, who works on ChatGPT or is, you know, runs ChatGPT essentially, right? He was on the Lex Fridman podcast about 10 days ago, really interesting podcast, and the safety issues was brought up there, so that he was challenged about that. Now, listening to the podcast opened my eyes about what ChatGPT can do, and
you say I opened your AIs.
Open my AIs to what it, not necessarily what it can do now, but the uses that it's gonna have, which are amazing. He mentioned sort of Elon Musk calling him out on Twitter all the time. They've sort of fallen out, but they still sort of love each other because everyone on Podland loves each other apart from James. James loves no one.
I love you, Gareth.
Oh no, don't, not in front of everyone. So what I found interesting about that is this does seem to be open discussion about AI between some big stakeholders. Now, that for me is healthy in that usually it feels like, I don't know, the banking world works behind closed doors. I think this is quite a positive thing that these people are out there having these conversations out in the open, right?
But that's the thing, the banking world works behind closed doors, but the financial world is regulated in a way that AI software isn't, like, because, and it is kind of strange that it's forced to come to this, which, and I'm not saying I want the government to get involved, but they're basically talking about a gentleman's agreement and gentle lady's agreement to just suspend things for 6 months, which seems strange. As much as I think that having the conversation is a good thing, I can't imagine how you can put that genie back in the bottle. And unilateral solutions don't work. Like, for example, the programmers and engineers and stuff in the US certainly are not going to pause progress if they're not doing so in China, for example. So we've almost now got an AI arms race going on.
Is it not the case of, in the way we sort of like regulate trade, would we not look at it like that? That, you know, you can't have this program sort of like...
But they're making new stuff. That's the thing. Like with trade is probably... I imagine it's not that simple on a kind of a macro level, but it's simpler than stuff that doesn't exist yet and they're making it up all the time and they don't yet know the kind of long-term implications of it.
Yeah. Pablo, you love this stuff, don't you? You live for it.
It's interesting, yeah.
Yeah, so what's your opinions on what's been happening in the last week?
I think a lot of good points have been made at this table.
Thank you.
We were talking about last week, but if you want to talk about the last five minutes,
thanks, Pabs. Thank you for reviewing our performance thus far.
It's true that at the end of the day, like, this is making people a lot of money. There's a lot of profit involved. And
I think there's a lot of profit involved in the future. I think we're at the tip of the iceberg of where the profit's going on this.
But support, actually, do they make money? Because I know, like, Uber's never turned a profit, has it?
Well, I don't know. Like, I feel like, because at the moment, what they're doing, and certainly, again, I'm going back to sort of like Midjourney and ChatGPT, they're learning from people. They're taking our data, yeah, and our, you know, our touch points on the internet, but it's the prompting that's really teaching it now. So I feel like they're not monetizing it until it's fucking brilliant.
It's already monetized to some degree, you know? I guess what I was coming from is more in terms of investment, the volume of investment. Now, if you do have AI technology behind you, which kind of promises, oh, this is hyper efficient, this is more efficient than however many thousands of workers, then yeah, investments are coming in like crazy. So if, you know, one company is like, oh, actually we're gonna pause because this is a bit scary, and someone else doesn't, that's them losing out to their competition, like James said, between like the US and China. Well, if just the US regulates to some degree the production of these AIs and China doesn't, then whoa, all of a sudden, like, you're behind.
You're
right?
Losing, yeah.
But I guess then the 6 months,
it's not a long time. 6 months,
it's not a long
it?
time. Exactly, yeah, that's the
you
thing.
Can't even
I think to get buy-in, unilateral buy-in from different regions, which is what, you know, essentially they'd have to do. That's a big old task.
It seems incredibly unlikely when you look at kind of the lack of alignment on like environmental policies, for example. This, which is even bigger and there's more money involved, just feels incredibly unlikely. And I wouldn't be surprised if people said, "Oh yeah, we'll stop, keep going, and keep working in the background or something."
Course. Anything about this story keeping you awake at night, Alicia? Or are you like, nah,
meh? It's fine. I mean, yeah, it's just sort of like, well, who's gonna regulate it?
Again,
like you're saying, like, if you can't agree on environmental things, which are literally the future of the world that we live on, then if there's money behind it, then no one's gonna care.
To be fair, I'd say this is more pressing than environmental policy, because I know like the environment's kind of for the future, but this is like, I don't know, when you look at how quickly it's moving, it's going to happen sooner than the Earth exploding because of climate change, for example. But
what's going to happen though?
But I don't know. But
this is interesting. What is the fear? What are people scared about?
Well, I think the fear in part is that it will kind of completely destabilize the fabric of society in too short a time frame, because so many people will essentially be made redundant. I don't know if that's true. And it's funny because some people have been talking about this and saying the concerns of the letter are all wrong, and it's almost a sort of Hollywood dystopian sort of view of it, and it's actually quite imprecise, whereas there's things like the kind of the whatever, like the racial or whatever biases of AI in the immediacy that are
are really scary things. But
exactly
it.
Because what this is talking about a lot is the AI that is as smart or smarter than human beings, but we're still kind of not really there yet, or at least it's not actually kind of widespread yet.
Computationally they're more smart than human beings, but like emotionally don't have emotional intelligence.
Sure,
they're nowhere close to it.
Exactly, and they're not sentient. And I don't know, it feels like a fairly common sense view to think that they're just mimicking sentience because they're so well programmed. But I saw some people, like the researchers into AI safety, are kind of a bit insulted because they're like, we've been looking at this for fucking ages. What do you think we're going to do in 6 months we weren't doing already?
But going back to Sam Altman, and if you haven't listened to that Lex Fridman podcast, I just think everyone should listen to it.
After this one,
he scares me a little bit. He really scares me, because he's just like, it's all great, but you know, it could go wrong. Not on our watch. And I'm like, yeah, that's kind of what, like, you need those safety measures in place, because I think at the moment it's in the hands of people that are trying to do something that is good for the working society. I believe that that's the way they're approaching it. But it very quickly could become a tool for malevolence.
Well,
right,
that's what's interesting, because I imagine, like, say for example, if you're making a film, you might not know that you're making a terrible film because you're so focused on your little bit. And I'd imagine it's similar with this, like the various kind of programmers and engineers are focusing on getting this little bit to work, that they're not even necessarily thinking about kind of the long-term consequences or the implications. So it could get to a position where all of a sudden there's not like somebody overseeing it and saying, yeah, great, and then it could suddenly go too far. Like, I know this is a thing in the CIA as well. Like, everybody has plausible deniability because there's not like one person who knows exactly what's going on. It's all a kind of self-sustaining system.
Do you think that's maybe why Sam Altman, for example, might be so confident that under his watch nothing bad is going to happen, because these people are talking about like dystopian almost situations where, oh, this AI is going to, you know, get out of hand, and then this is going to happen, and then this is going to happen, and they're saying, you know, that's the problem that we have to somehow avoid, whereas in reality problems are already happening. I mean, you guys have discussed in this podcast before, like, oh, students are starting to use this, and BuzzFeed now has officially integrated ChatGPT into the things.
Like,
that seems superficial, but it's like, oh, okay, like already in its current iteration it can do a lot of harm to education and how children...
I don't think that's the biggest worry, that like kids are going to just use ChatGPT to write their essays.
Nah, we find new ways of learning and expressing intelligence as well.
This happens, I feel like, all the time with like new inventions and stuff like that.
Eminem came along, we said it was the end of the world.
Is this not the same thing that like the uproar that there probably was when like the internet first came about, where they were just like, we don't know how to control this. This could have a mind of its own. It's going to change the way, you know. People will use it for good, people will use it for bad. Like, I don't know.
Every generation seems to think that they have some sort of existential threat they're facing, whether that's ChatGPT or NWA.
I think where we're at the moment, you can't deny it's quite exciting times, because all we do at the moment, every time you go on social social media, you see a new, like we were talking about the Pope wearing, what was he wearing?
The papal puffer jacket.
That
was another thing that was in culture last week, the kind of the fake histories and stuff, and some of them are crazy, and they are actually, like, I think at first we thought we were quite good at spotting the AI generated stuff, whereas now more and more people are actually getting duped.
You know, like I see people all the time sharing, I don't know, their ChatGPT poetry or whatever. This isn't what it's for, right? At the moment, this is not what it's for. It's not for, like, you know, making a clever collaboration with Nike. It's not for, you know, testing out how well it can write some poetry or whatever. It's for a very real future where we will be able to do things super quickly and it integrates itself into our lives in a way, Sam Altman says, we will be able to work literally 100 times faster on how we're doing things. And for that, as a dyslexic, as someone that loves what they do and loves to always do more, that's quite exciting, I reckon. It's just all the other shit I'm a bit scared.
Yeah, this was Oscar Wilde's dream, that we'll all just have time to just sit around and kind of think about life and stuff. So I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait to be replaced.
Where are we going to sit around and think about life, James?
My house, my graph, yeah.
What else you got then, James?
Well, I bought that story because Pablo's a robot, and I bought this one because the three remaining ones of us went to Amsterdam last year, and the city of Amsterdam have now released a campaign, which is a kind of anti-marketing campaign, targeting young British people in particular, telling them to stay away if they're just coming to have a good time, basically.
At this point, I would like to tell the listeners, I mean, I'd go on holiday with James and Alicia, but it was a work-related trip. Yeah. We weren't just there to, you know, kick some cars in and do a bit of sex tourism, but
speak for yourself. Yeah.
It's an interesting one. Obviously, Amsterdam is very famous for its lack of restrictions, I guess, to
the Bangkok of Europe, you could call
it. There you go. This story is quite funny on a multiple of levels, but like, number one, like, Amsterdam, you do those things, yeah, it's always going to attract people, right? Like, I don't think having a campaign to say is really going to work on this one, because it's the fact that you can smoke drugs openly, you fully promote
there's women in windows.
Sex work. Those are the things that are drawing people in. I think an advert telling them to not come over is not going to work.
Yeah, you can't still have all of that stuff and then say, but you're not allowed to come in. And also, this is the thing. I wonder if, like, this is intentional, because if anything, it looks like, I don't know, it's a bit of a red rag to a bull, isn't it? Like, saying, oh, we've got all this amazing stuff, but you can't come. To me, I feel like that would make the people that they're trying to make stay away go, wow, if they're trying to keep us away, then it must be fucking brilliant. It's a big red bus.
So it seems to me like this is just like a cut and shut, like, whatever, boring story, like, yeah, okay, I get it. But then I found it a bit interesting, because when James and I had a look at the actual video that accompanied it this morning, the video is cheap.
It's fucking awful, yeah.
It is rubbish.
Not awful, but like, it took them the better part of a morning, you'd imagine.
But then I've seen it on the BBC, I've seen it on CNBC.
It's cracked America,
this news. Like, this bullshit video and, you know, not particularly interesting message seems to have had global reach. Tell me what you're doing, Amsterdam. Who is it? Who's behind it?
It doesn't really say. It just says the city of Amsterdam. Yeah. The people who run Amsterdam, I suppose.
Made the shittest video the ever. Got it everywhere. Yeah. Everywhere. Who are their PR people?
But that's what I'm saying. Have they done this on purpose, or has it just snowballed for some random reason?
I think it's
sure
a good
about.
Headline. That's probably yeah, why.
But is that what it is? Maybe the idea is...
Because it's a ridiculous thing. So like,
yeah. So like a stay away campaign, yeah.
You're Spanish. Do you, like, flocks of geezers from Spain go over?
It definitely happens, yeah. Every summer, yeah. You get a bunch of gang.
Gang! Like, they're affiliated! Wow.
Gangs in the light sense of friends flocking over to Amsterdam to be naughty.
I'm just wondering why they've singled out the British.
I think Brits abroad do have a particular reputation. I think, yeah.
Most of their tourism is probably from
Britain.
But
that's what I was going to say.
Right,
so it's only a half hour over there, isn't it? And also, they've got nice places in Spain already, whereas, I don't know, we're not going to go to Bognor Regis to smoke a joint, are you?
Alicia, thoughts on this?
I think it's funny. I mean, as someone who is not being told to stay away, it doesn't really affect me.
Mm. Why are you not being told to stay away?
To know. I'm just a polite American old lady.
You're sort of British now. You've been here long
thank
enough.
You. Yeah, thank you.
I think James, sort of age-wise and profiling-wise, you're in the crosshairs, mate.
This is why I bought this, because I feel personally attacked by this. And like, it's the same thing where, like, I often see myself striking fear into the hearts of old ladies who cross the street to get away from me. And it doesn't help your case if you chase them down and say, no, I'm nice, trust me. So, yeah, I feel a little bit attached by this.
As every good gammon does. All right, cool. Well, look, that's that.
Well, don't try to scoot along after calling me gammon. Do you know what? Last time we called me gammon repeatedly, my mum asked me what gammon was, and I had to explain to her, and she wasn't very happy with you. So you will be hearing from my mother.
She is welcome on the podcast anytime. Alicia, what have you got for us this week?
So my story is about Chipotle. So they have incorporated 3 new menu items onto their whatever menu.
Can I just stop you there quickly?
Yeah.
This sounds like it's going to be a really good story.
I mean, let's just to recap. Last time you brought 5 guys.
Yeah, Shake Shack, I believe, actually.
Okay, Shake Shack, sorry.
Well, no, it's just, this is an interesting concept. So basically, they incorporated some viral TikTok hacks, right? So I think on TikTok, Instagram, things like that, the popular trend is to, you know, talk about your favorite restaurants, Starbucks, Waffle House, whatever it is, Chipotle, and talk about sort of the menu that you make yourself. So like your hacks to get more bang for your buck or whatever. So what Chipotle has done is they've sort of noticed what people have been saying, the popular videos, partnered with those people, and then created those as menu items. So sort of getting people involved, as opposed to, I think sometimes like Starbucks, they're like, please stop like trying to order these crazy drinks you see on TikTok. We don't want to deal with it. Instead, they've embraced it, said, look, we'll take a couple of months to train all of our employees on these new menu items. And then they're now officially on the menu and you can order them. And now people feel like, I don't know, they're a bit closer to the brand that they love because, you know, their stuff could be on the menu next.
Okay. I mean, I can't argue with this story in terms of what they're doing. I think, you know, in terms of sort of like advertising, it's good to sort of embrace those things. I can't say it's like groundbreakingly cool, though. James?
I'll turn it to Stephen Gerrard then. I mean, I like it because I like the kind of people power, I suppose, and like listening to your audience rather than
that's
kind
the
thing
I really like.
Rather than making enemies of them in a Starbucksy way. Although to be fair, people who order half shot this that from the hollowed out skull of an orphan at Starbucks is a bit much.
So like dig into it for a little bit for me. So like people on TikTok are saying,
you know, like you see hacks. So like, say for example, say in the UK McDonald's, the McGangbang. Actually, you probably don't want to call it that, do we?
Was that the last story about Amsterdam?
McGangbang. But no,
that wasn't our trip.
It's not like you can buy the double cheeseburger and a mayo chicken. So at Taco Bell, where it's kind of quite customizable, there's a load of people who will basically come up with their own meal, a menu hack, particularly to get more stuff out of the menu, I think, so you can get like the most food for the least money. And now it looks like rather than trying to kind of close that loophole, Chipotle have said, yeah, all right, you know what, we'll actually put this on the menu properly, so you can just point and say, give me that one.
Well, so Waffle House, I think, was one of the people that were like, absolutely not, we don't want to deal with this, because I think there was some hack, it was like making a sandwich, like a waffle sandwich, chicken sandwich or whatever.
Sounds
and then
gross.
I think there was some chicken waffles.
Yeah, what's wrong with you?
I think there was a picture of a sign outside of a Waffle House that went viral, which is basically like, stop trying to ask us for this TikTok thing. We're not going to make it, like, blah, blah, blah. So I think people are just like, some people are just like, we're not having it because it's just too complicated. It takes too much time.
If the first people to embrace this, then I think that's a really cool move because it's, you know, you're looking for ins, and that's a great way of just going like, yeah, okay. If everyone's telling you no, then Chipotle are going to tell you yes. Yeah, I'm just kind of like, yeah, that's cool.
It's an easy sell as well, isn't it? Like, you know how when like McDonald's did this, we've got the chicken Big Mac now. It's a nicer story if you can say, you spoke, we listened, here you go. I think it's smart, and I imagine if they are the first to do this sort of thing, then they probably won't be the last.
Side note, has anyone tried the chicken Big Mac?
Has it got
Big Mac-y sauce in it then, is it? Is it reminiscent of the Big Mac, apart from the way it looks? Gareth,
it's exactly how you'd expect it to be. I felt like a bit of a fucking idiot, because it just tastes like a Big Mac with a chicken patty in it. It's all right, it's fine. Like, McDonald's is never more than like a 6 or 7 out of 10, is it? Oh, sorry, I didn't realise that was not quite so controversial then. There was a deep inhalation of breath from that side of the room.
I can't believe you've just ruined the podcast forever. We're getting taken down now. No, Pablo.
I was just reading about this Chipotle thing. I haven't heard about it, so I was like, oh, I'll see if I can find some images or something. And I just read something that's quite interesting, because apparently Chipotle themselves are not necessarily ecstatic about the results of their new hack campaign. The chief corporate affairs officer has said, while we have long embraced customizations and even released our own hack menu, the current social media trend is resulting in a poor experience for our food, our employees, and our customers waiting for orders.
Well, Alicia, I'm afraid to say that Pablo has
he's
bent down and he's taking a big steaming shit right on your story.
I was so close.
thank you. I feel like I've just woken up. Thank you, Pablo.
Pablo, what have you got for the podcast?
That was gamesmanship. He's really set himself up now. What have you got?
Well, I bring a follow-up to a story discussed a couple podcasts ago, I think.
Okay, go on.
About the woolly mammoth being
revitalized. We had a story about the woolly mammoth being brought back in a very Jurassic Park style. They were going to sort of start to populate parts of
Siberia?
The far north, wasn't it? Yeah.
As a follow-up to that, it seems that we've kind of done it in a really roundabout way. An Australian company called Vow have successfully made a mammoth meatball.
You mean like a meatball that you'd eat? Like a mama's meatball, right?
Yes.
Okay. Oh.
What were you thinking, guys?
Don't say mama's meatball. Oh, I want some mama's meatball.
Yeah, so they've genetically engineered with some mammoth DNA, some DNA from the African elephant, and combined it in sciencey ways.
There was something about some sheep stuff in there, wasn't there? Or
I think it's mainly sheep. I think they've been quite cute with their headline, yeah.
But they've basically combined a bunch of genetic material from different animals and a little bit of mammoth, mainly.
So really, it's an abomination, is what it is.
That's a nice mix of all your favorites.
So what they say is that it's mainly the genes that determine meat consistency and meat color and meat taste, and they've kind of included them in to make it as mammothy as they possibly could. Also important to note that not even Vow, the company that has made it, has dared to eat this meatball because they're a bit scared of the 10,000-year-old proteins in it.
I bet you someone had a little, like...
Have a little bit off the edge, wouldn't
you? Yeah, exactly.
Just a nice crispy outside bit.
Yeah, right? Just to know. And they cooked it, right? They must have cooked it, yeah?
Yes, they cooked it.
How did they know it was cooked?
To be honest, Gareth, it looks like they overcooked it.
I'm
sure that's not the main issue, but yeah, it doesn't look the best.
Now, what's this story actually trying to highlight? Like, what's it saying?
Basically, it's trying to say, hey, we can grow meat in a lab and you can eat it.
So mammoths went extinct because of climate change. Like, in a roundabout way, it's talking about climate change and the effects on climate change today by the meat industries. And it's something that we could do something about by growing meat in a lab.
That's what this company do as well. They're a cultured meat company. And when it says cultured meat, I think it means, like, from a Petri dish, not that they go to the theatre.
I think it's a great story, though. I think, like, it's weird. It's wonderful. It does a great job of sort of highlighting a point, I think. Would you eat a mammoth meatball, Alicia?
No.
You look shocked.
Do they have it at Chipotle?
Was it on the hack menu?
Maybe. No. Why? I guess this could be like an interesting, like, new take on, like, exotic food tourism and stuff like that. There was a turtle that is now extinct, and the reason why it was extinct is because it was so delicious, and like literally people couldn't not eat this turtle or whatever it is. So I feel like those sort of things I'd be curious to try. Woolly mammoth isn't that exciting to me personally.
I mean, we used to eat a lot of them.
You want a nice fried dodo, maybe?
Maybe. Yeah. I could be keen. So yeah, I mean, I can see how, like, this could be taken into, you know, you spend £600 and you get to eat samples of food that doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, it's like the secret menu where you can eat dolphin or something at a sushi place.
Oh, it's not that secret in some places, yeah.
All right, then. Well, listen, where do people go and find the new newsletter if they want to have a read of it this week?
They will go to zachagency.com/cool-sht. Although Pablo did just say something about how he thinks he might have destroyed the website. So so hopefully it's still there.
Guys, thank you very much. And we'll be seeing you next week.
Cheers. Thank you.
Thank you. Ciao.